Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast. I'm your host, Neil Horwitz. You can always find more information on the podcast at our website, dsmsports.net, and follow me on Twitter at njh287. But we got a fantastic show for you today. Someone who's a star in the industry, especially if you're into the sports sponsorship activation side, Brian Gaynor is our guest today. You may know him as the creator of the Partnership Activation Newsletter. He was with GMR Marketing for a while, working on a lot of sports projects, and is now Director of Strategy and Analytics at Freshwire. And we talk about everything you could possibly want to ever learn about sports sponsorships, partnerships, what makes them successful, and where they're evolving, where they're headed today. But before we get to Brian, let's get into this episode's helpful tool. All right, our helpful tool for this episode of the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast is not only fun to play with, but also can be very useful, and it's called Topsy. You may have heard of it if you're into the social media game. It's been around for a while and made bigger news in the last couple of months when they officially archived every tweet ever, according to Topsy. And it's just a great way to keep track of hashtag use and keyword use of not just Twitter, but a number of social networks. You can search by keyword or by hashtag, and you can also narrow it down to just tweets, to just videos, just photos, to just links. You can also filter down by time, past hour, past 7 days, past month, all time. You can see how many all-time tweets using a given hashtag, for example, sports biz. You can look up how many times that hashtag has been used ever, in addition to how many times it's been used in the last 24 hours, for example. So what can you do with this as a sports marketer? Well, lots of fun things you can do. First, it's a good easy way to track use of a keyword or hashtag over time, looking for peaks and valleys, especially if you're working with a specific promotion with a hashtag or following your team's specific hashtag. You can sort of look at what those peaks and valleys are representing. It's also an easy way to track and run contests. You can do a contest on Twitter or on Instagram and tell fans to use a certain hashtag and track entries that way, much easier than doing it manually. You can also track tweets over time by keyword and identify the top tweets for any given day or time frame. That's another way to filter it out using their freemium technology. Lastly, you can also use it to really produce great content. Don't underestimate what awesome content this is giving you. If you tell fans that in the last hour the NHL hashtag has been used X number of times, or their team's hashtag has been used. Hashtag Go Sharks has been used X number of times in the last 24 hours. That's fun, easy content that gets fans excited. You can also use it to run charity campaigns based on hashtag use, Twitter sort of showdowns between teams about whose hashtag gets used more. That's a common use as well. Just a lot of cool things you can do with Topsy, and take a look at it. You'll have some fun with it. You can find it anytime at topsy.com. All right, with that, we'll be right back with our interview with Brian Gaynor of Freshwire and with the Partnership Activation Newsletter. Stay tuned. All right, that was this episode's helpful tool. It's called Topsy. I encourage you to check it out and just play around with it, have some fun. There's a lot of cool things you can do with it, from tracking and measuring to even just producing some cool content that your fans will enjoy knowing about. But with that, we have a fantastic guest coming up right now, someone I've been an admirer of for a long time. And welcome to the podcast, Brian Gaynor.
Great. Thank you very much for having me, Neil. I really appreciate it and looking forward to being on with you.
So, Brian, are you familiar with Topsy at all? Have you ever been tracking hashtags or anything over time?
You know what? I've recently come across Topsy, and I've been really, really impressed with the ability that users can have to search a lot of the content that they've shared out, but also get access to a lot of other valuable content. So while I haven't used it much as a resource to date, it's definitely a tool that I'm going to plan on incorporating and sharing moving forward.
And a really cool thing too is that if you actually search bios of people on Twitter. You can search by keywords, so you often come up just because you have a strong Twitter profile. So that also is pretty cool.
Yeah, great to hear. I'll definitely have to check that out.
But Brian is Director of Strategy and Analytics at Freshwire, a content marketing agency. But he's been part of the sports marketing world for a while now. You may know him through his partnership activation newsletter as well. Very well respected, highly regarded in the field. And we're going to talk to Brian today about sports partnerships, sports marketing, digital marketing, and really what creates a strong sports activation. You see a lot of it out there these days, and some people are doing it well, some people aren't doing it so well. But, Brian, before we get into the meat of the interview, so to speak, we always like to get to know our guests a little bit. We know a little about where you came from, how you got to where you are, your interests. So tell us a little bit about your career path. It's been a bit varied at times, and now you're really settling into a strong role where you're embracing analytics and sports and content. But just tell us a little about your background.
Sure thing. Thanks again, Neil. So I had the opportunity at the University of Florida during my freshman year. I was a business major, but realized I really wanted to work in the sports space, especially walking by the swamp on a daily basis. So I got my start in the sports field, working in college athletics within the sports information department at the University of Florida, helping
Brian,
a lot.
Are we talking Tebow time, or are you before or after?
I was pre-Tebow time. So this is 2001 to 2004. So the last years of Spurrier, the years of Ron Zook, just prior to Urban Meyer and a lot of the national championships.
Excellent. Good for context.
So I was at the University of Florida for a couple of years working in their sports info department, helping out with a lot of the different sports, more from a PR aspect. And that experience, you know, through network site or contacting or networking I had done and just gaining experience, I was able to get a couple internships within the NFL. So I worked for the Miami Dolphins for one summer, and then I worked for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers for two summers. And those experiences led me to a gig after I graduated from the University of Florida with NFL Europe. So I lived over in Germany for about 6 to 8 months, living with a team and in a PR capacity. And then following that time, I went and got my MBA and master's in sports administration from Ohio University, the leading sports graduate program in the country. There at Ohio, I kind of tapped my interest in, and I kind of realized what I was really good at and what I was really passionate about, and that was sports marketing. So while I had an NFL background and a background working in college athletics, I realized I really wanted to kind of help brands leverage sports to drive their business, particularly beer brands. So the Anheuser-Busch of the world, the Miller Coors of the world. And within the program, I got connected with a few individuals at GMR Marketing. And what attracted me to GMR was the fact that they had Miller Coors as a client. And I saw that it was pretty tough getting in on the client side, at least, you know, at a younger age. So I thought, I can go cut my teeth and get some really, really good experience at GMR and then eventually, you know, potentially make the crossover to the brand side. So after I left Ohio, I spent 3 years down in GMR Charlotte office working on the Lowe's account, their ING account, and working in their sports group. And it really exposed me to the world of sponsorships and the value there is. And so I had a lot of great experiences working down in the GMR Charlotte office. And then had an opportunity to move up to Milwaukee to work on the Comcast team, where I really delved into social media and helped them build their sports social media platform around the Xfinity Sports Guy. But during my time at GMR, I as an account coordinator where I first started out in the Charlotte office, I started a newsletter and a website called Partnership Activation. It's just a way to share kind of best practices, some creative thoughts I had, and network with others in the industry because I felt like I was becoming a number in the agency world, and I really wanted to kind of differentiate myself. So over the course of about 4 years, you know, I worked on partnership activation solely outside of GMR on nights and weekends, again, to kind of build a thought leadership platform. And the site and newsletter really just kind of took off over the years.
And was it more just that you noticed there really was no thought leadership in this field yet? No one really helping to collect some of these best practices?
Yeah, so when I started the site, you know, as a young, you know, aspirational, sports marketer. There was really only two sites you could go to for information, though, Sports Business Journal and IEG at the time. And while I love both sites, both were very roadblocked and were your traditional sports publications. So I really, again, set out to just create an outlet where I could share my creative ideas, you know, share what I thought were best practices from across the world, and really try to just put my lens or insight on it. And again, I just saw it as a great way to build a platform that wasn't out there that all sports marketers could tap into, and therefore would help with, you know, networking and just sharing great ideas.
Just as an aside to that as well, was GMR supportive of your external interest there with partnership activation, or were they aware of what you were doing on the weekends with your spare time?
Yeah, so all along, GMR was very, very supportive. I made it very clear that GMR, and the work I was doing for our clients is my number one priority. But they were supportive of me, putting some time and thought against the website and newsletter. So I'm very appreciative of that. But I feel like I've handled it the way I needed to, again, with making sure my priorities were aligned the right way. And again, they've been supportive along the way.
Definitely, and so you came up in a more PR role from going out of school at least, and then sort of transitioned more into the marketing space. What kind of skills did you have to pick up along the way to really help equip you to become less of PR, more marketing, and especially in a really quickly evolving landscape with websites and social media coming into play?
Yeah, that's a great question. I'm thankful that I was able to get in the door in college athletics and the NFL from a PR standpoint, because one, it was my way in. As a sophomore doing internships in the NFL, that was great experience. I was able to get some really, really solid experiences. But two, PR kind of helped me look at the sport through a lens that I traditionally wouldn't have been able to from a marketing standpoint. So a lot of direct access with the players and personnel, a full understanding of kind of how teams approach the media and how they manage their brand. So it gave me some really good insights, at a younger age. But while I was getting a lot of those PR experiences, I was also a marketing major at University of Florida. So I was getting a lot of the business principles. And then when I went to Ohio University, that was really the step that really pulled everything together. That's where I was able to apply business thinking, getting my MBA with sports thinking, working in an environment with a lot of other sharp individuals and getting to experience a lot of different things and conferences. And that was really what I consider my launching pad, because it really kind of gave me that extra advantage I felt like I needed to have a successful start in sports business.
Very good. We actually just had a recent podcast with an Ohio U alum himself who was down in South Florida, James Royer of Tampa Bay Lightning. I'm not sure if you know James at all, but he's also a very sharp mind and an Ohio U grad.
Yep, James, a really, really sharp guy. We've connected a number of times, and the Ohio University programs put out so many outstanding individuals. And what really makes it powerful is just the network. It's more of a family and a culture than anything, and it really kind of sets you up for success in the industry.
Very cool. And I want to touch on something that you said there as well, which is very important, is how that PR experience really helped you understand the importance of the interplay between brand and marketing, and that sometimes it's not as integrated as it needs to be. And I think that's something that maybe helped fuel you a little bit as you went into marketing and really understanding that every effort you put into marketing, every single piece of content you create or promo, it has to be on brand and with the brand that PR has helped determine.
Yeah, I mean, it's been interesting. The last, 7 years in sports, it's been amazing to see how much the landscape shifted, especially when you look at PR and the impact that social media has had on PR and the way that brands see themselves. I mean, brands these days are so much more reactive and proactive. And when you look at Coca-Cola's strategy, they talk about being liquid and linked. So they've got to be active and they've got to be pushing out content on a very active basis, but all the content's got to tie back to their brand in some way. So it's been a very kind of exciting ride over the past, 5 to 7 years with, seeing what social media and new technologies have done in sports. And that's really kind of what's led me to my most recent role, as director of strategy and analytics at Freshwire. We specialize in creating real-time content for brands worldwide. And it's really a space that you know, honestly really didn't exist 5 years ago. I mean, people created content in different ways, but now there's such a strong push around content marketing and brands seeing themselves as publishers. And you know, it's a really exciting time to kind of be a part of the mix there as well.
Oh, it's incredible. Having had some experience on the agency side myself, you definitely see the timelines getting shorter and shorter from, okay, we used to have a week, 2 weeks to route this around and get it approved and get it proofread and all that. And now it's, okay, let's get this out and done within minutes. And that's how quick that content needs to come out now. I wanted to ask you though quickly about before we transition forward, is how do you go about finding all these great activations to feature in your partnership activation newsletter? I mean, there's a ton that I'm sure you can't even include, and they're all always just so fantastic. How do you go about just staying on top of everything?
Yeah, so honestly, I've got a couple of go-to resources that I check out on a regular basis for ideas, and then, you know, I rely on my network. You know, people share ideas or things that they're working on that they think is really compelling. You know, but I use a couple of non-traditional sources to get a lot of the information. One being YouTube. Searching for specific brands within the search functionality on YouTube, you can really get a good understanding of what creative content brands are putting out there in the marketplace. I also leverage Flickr and Google Images and search again by keywords and search within a past week or the past month to just look for new creative ways that brands are leveraging their sponsorships. But then I've also set up Google Alerts. So in my inbox on a daily basis, I'm getting articles about keywords I'm interested in that are coming in, so it's very easy for me to scroll through that curated content and find articles or things that interest me. And then I use a mix of, you know, traditional resources. So Twitter is always a great outlet, especially when you use specific keywords like sports biz or digisport or sponsorship. And then Sports Business Journal, Sports Business Daily, and a number of other publications. But it's really just kind of an assortment. And I think the biggest thing is your mindset and how you approach things on a daily basis. So I went from, you know, just reading articles to now, you know, I actively seek out creative ideas. And I actively think about how things could be different. And I think when you take on that mindset, it's a lot easier for you to kind of, you know, come across or find a lot of these compelling ideas worldwide that you could share out or apply to your own business.
Wow, fascinating. That's a lot of great advice. They're not just the tools and the strategies you use to find content, but just the mindset of how do I, you know, get better every day? I want to learn something new every day. And there's a lot of good ideas out there that you can learn from. That's really cool, Brian. So let's segue into a little bit more about sports activations in general. What is it about sports sponsorships that makes it so uniquely attractive to brands? I mean, obviously there's certain brands in particular. Your experience with beer brands and Lowe's. But what is it that makes sports so attractive?
Oh, and you're trying to reach a mass audience these days. I mean, there's not many other platforms out there like sports where you can actively reach and engage and message to fans around live viewing content. And that's why, you know, TV ratings are so high around sports programming, and why sponsorship dollars, you know, are so attractive around that. But from a team and league sponsorship standpoint, I mean, it's such a pure opportunity to engage with fans in a one-to-one basis. And what's unique about sponsorship is it's really, you know, one of the most natural, you know, ways out there for brands to enhance a consumer's experience doing something, especially and reach a large audience or maybe a targeted audience if they're going, you know, if they're a certain demo. So there's just so many different attributes about sports that make, you know, it appealing for certain brands to achieve different objectives. But at the end of the day, it's all about, again, you're creating one-to-one, memorable, engaging experiences for consumers that tie back to your brand that, you know, will help them, you know, ultimately, you know, become a customer for life. So that's why I feel like sports, music, and entertainment, you know, platforms are so powerful for sponsorship.
Oh, I love that. Just tying it back to the brand and creating a better experience for the fan. That's huge insight right there. And I noticed even just the word choice in your studies, it's not sports sponsorships or partnership sponsorships. It's it's a true partnership. That's the key word there. It's not just one supporting the other. It's two entities, a sports team or a sports player working together with a brand. And are you finding that those are the most successful things? Is when you can really have that synergy of a true partnership with both sides finding value in it?
Yeah, and that's kind of the premise behind the name Partnership Activation is, again, just, you know, not undervaluing, you know, what a partnership means versus a sponsorship. And I think you've seen a lot of teams move away from sponsorship and move towards, you know, more of a partnership, because at the end of the day, that's what brands want. They want some type of mutual relationship that's going to provide value to both parties. It's not a brand just giving a lump sum of money to a team to fund whatever they're doing. It truly, you know, when brands invest dollars, they expect a return on their investment. And so it's really important that all parties involved approach it that way.
Excellent. And tell me, do you find that it's more about just finding where these synergies intersect between a brand and a sports team or a league? Or is it sometimes brands coming into a potentially what they see as a viable situation and saying, let's find a way to fit these two together. Let's find that intersection, even if it's difficult to do. Is it more about the brand finding the right sport or the sport finding the right brand? Or can you make it fit? Can the most creative minds make anything fit?
I think that kind of plays into the key role that agencies provide for brands. And that's, you know, agencies having a really good understanding of the sports landscape or whatever landscape the brand's interested in, and being able to consult them on, based on, you know, the goals and objectives that the brand set forth and the target audience that they're looking to reach. You know, it's really up to the agency to kind of help navigate them within the space. There being so many different leagues and properties and sports that brand that, you know, could be a potential fit for a brand, it's really dependent upon the agency to kind of help navigate them to identify the one that's the perfect fit or the one that's going to provide the most opportunity for the brand to see value. So, you know, while a lot of teams do prospecting, you know, trying to find the right partners, you know, partners or brands are doing prospecting as well. And again, I think that's really the key role that agencies play, is making sure that there's the right match. And once the right match is made, making sure that both parties, you know, can see some full value from that partnership.
So the agency can play sort of a matchmaker, so to speak, finding the ones that will fit and maximize value for both sides.
Correct. Yeah. The agency is really the expert that's helping to guide brands and help them make the right decisions and fully maximize the value of the partnerships that they have.
Are you finding, whether from your time at GMR or now with Freshwire, that teams and or brands are starting to look to agencies more to help facilitate these successful happy marriages? Or is it still a lot of in-house stuff that people are just trying to do the best they can with what they know?
Well, I think when you look at the, you know, top 100 spenders within the sports space, the majority of those spenders are, you know, typically aligned with an agency of record. So that, you know, that's pretty commonplace. There are a number of agencies in the marketplace that are helping brands make the right decisions. I mean, as far as teams go, you know, there's some teams that have, you know, continued to you know, fit the bill with the traditional model where, you know, they go out and proactively sell and build relationships on their own. Others have looked to third parties to help them, and we've seen that in the college landscape with IMG College and Learfield Sports. And while they're not agencies, they're more so rights holders, but I think it is pretty prevalent in the sports landscape that there normally is some type of middleman or third party that's kind of helping, you know, maximize the value of the partnerships.
Interesting. And definitely, as you have been both on the sideline and on the playing field, so to speak, over these last several years, you've seen a lot more digital activations, I'm sure, as well as on-site activations, and a lot more, especially now with your role at Freshwire, of defining KPIs, defining what are our quantitative or our measurable goals here for this activation. Are you seeing a more robust interest in that ROI number, or RO, as some like to say, return on objective? And what kind of KPIs are you defining these days to track success?
Yeah, you know, honestly, that's a tough question to answer because the ROI and ROO vary so widely based on different brands that you're talking about. So, you know, while a lot of teams are out there selling assets, you know, a lot of the measurables or deliverables, you know, I guess they're quantifying the value is based on impressions or engagement, comments, likes, and things of that nature. When at the end of the day, I think, you know, it's really important to look at some of the qualitative things too. So, you know, teams can show, you know, access to you know, specific influencers or specific audiences. I think that there's a lot of ways that both teams and brands can approach social, measuring it from, yeah, more so an ROO standpoint than ROI, only because we've seen Twitter and Facebook and a number of other platforms make a lot of advancements in the past year or so from an analytics standpoint, but you know we're continuing to I guess see more growth in that area. And in the interim, I think it's important that again brands kind of you know before they do anything really understand what their goals and objectives are. And I think that there's a lot of things that they can measure outside of you know I guess the typical quantifiable figures that most people think about.
Are we at a crossroads right now where in the past maybe it wasn't as important to report to the C-suite what the return was on a billboard or on a hat giveaway at a giveaway night? But now for just about any promotion, especially digital and social, it seems like they want hard numbers. We want to see, okay, we spent this much and we got this many leads or this many sales. Are we sort of at that point now where people aren't really sure what we should be quantifying and what needs to be looked at more from a qualitative standpoint?
Yeah, I think, you know, when brands and teams look at the social space, I think the biggest opportunity is identifying ownable elements and finding elements that can transcend, you know, not just social, but they can be brought to life to enhance the on-site experience. So whether it's like social decks or ownable content series that they can, you know, drive conversations throughout an entire year, I think when you look at social elements as a standalone, it really doesn't make a lot of sense. But when you can package it into, you know, what the brand is doing with their entire partnership and finding ways to take, you know, their typical activation elements and bring those to life through social to reach a whole new audience, I think that's where you see a lot of the value versus, you know, trying to measure the impact of individual tweets or posts or things like that. So, you know, I think it's all about the way that properties approach the channel. And if they see it more as not a support mechanism, but an extension of what they're currently doing, I think that's where you can show, you know, a lot more value than you would looking at things as standalone.
Fascinating. That's definitely true. You're seeing a lot more multi-channel marketing, integrated campaigns where it's not just we're only on Facebook with them or we're only on site with them at a venue. Is that the norm nowadays where if you're not doing a campaign or an activation across multiple channels, are you kind of missing the boat, so to speak?
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest, I guess, opportunity or missed opportunity in sports right now is, you know, we still continue to see a number of brands that focus on activating on site to reach, you know, the season ticket holders and the fans attending games. And in reality, they're missing the thousands or millions of fans, you know, tuning in nationwide or fans of the team nationwide. And so that's really where, you know, teams can create that extension through their social channels to bring that activation to life. And the other area I really see as an opportunity in social is, you know, a lot of brands, you know, continue to want to test the waters or do things that are innovative. And I feel like, you know, teams have a great opportunity to leverage their social channels to be able to help brands do that in a rather cost-effective way. They don't have to invest a lot, and they can test the waters and do something unconventional, and reach fans or enhance the fan experience in a different way. And so I think that's really an undertapped opportunity as well for teams and brands to capitalize in this space.
So is it more about a brand creating positive feedback by working with a team, and you know maybe it's an all-access piece with a player that is presented to you by X brand, or is it really about also you know tying in that brand's product itself and having some sort of semblance of this is what we're ultimately trying to do is turn you into customers of both team and brand? I mean, if that makes sense, I guess as opposed to just this is presented by you know Honda or this is a player driving a Honda around town. Does that make sense? Where it's almost looking at, are we just going to brand this piece of content? Or are we going to actually tie in our brand and product with this content?
I mean, clearly the best situations are when it's a win-win-win for fans, the team, and the brand. So naturally, you would want to find an opportunity where the brand can integrate their product, their messaging in an authentic way, but do so in a way that's going to, again, enhance the fans' experience. So a lot of times that can be pretty tricky to kind of figure out what that is. But when it's done right, that's really where you kind of strike gold. So we are starting to see, you know, again, more brands kind of invest in branded content, whether it's online videos or social graphics. And while they're kind of presented by or that type of designation is fine, you know, again, the areas where it's going to drive the most value for the brand is where you can, you know, find a way to do it where it's really going to tie back to the brand and enhance the experience in the same respect.
Are there any examples off the top of your head that really accomplished that with success as far as activating both with the brand itself and that alignment with the team?
Yeah, I mean, the one that comes to mind, you know, just because I watched it yesterday, is the work that Dodge Durango is doing right now around the new Anchorman movie.
Fantastic.
With Will Ferrell, I mean, they're able to convey a lot of the key attributes of their products and their cars in a very kind of funny way that leverages a lot of the equities of the movie. And while it's not really a sports play, it's a great example, I think, of how a brand can authentically insert their product into a spot, but do it in a way that, you know, is truly entertaining and memorable. So that's just one that immediately comes to mind.
So is that the kind of stuff that's really going to get a brand's decision makers excited when they're seeing a pitch from a team or from an agency? Is it not so much the large impression numbers that maybe used to get people's juices flowing? Is it really now this is a really innovative idea, or this we really like the way this ties in our brand? Is the burden on the team itself more about delivering true value as opposed to just gross numbers that no one really knows whether or not they affect the bottom line?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing that brands are looking for from teams, you know, when they're, you know, looking at decks or offers, is really a property that understands their business, or at least, you know, attempts to understand their business, and also delivers a custom solution that makes sense for their business. So, you know, the last thing you want is a cookie cutter PowerPoint deck that has assets in there that anyone could activate. So I think that's really, really key, that it does require more preparation and insight and ownable ideas for teams to kind of come up with. But at the end of the day, if teams approach it the right way, that's going to result in the most successful partnership. So, yeah, it's really, really important that properties convey that they truly understand partner's business and the value and impact that they can deliver in the upfront to, you know, when they're prospecting.
Very interesting. And it definitely goes back again to what you said about a true partnership and really understanding the other brand itself, and not just changing out your generic deck, changing a name here and there and an asset here and there. It's really knowing what's going to work best for that brand. Is the burden more on the team itself to say this is what's going to work best for you, or the brand coming in and saying this is what we know is going to work best for us?
Well, I think it's really important for both parties to be very transparent in their feedback or in the process. So it's really important for, again, brand teams to make sure that they invest the time and resources and ideation, understanding a partner's business and bringing forth the best inventory or best ownable platforms for a brand. And then it's also important for a brand the brand marketers and agency partners to be very upfront with what's worked best in the past. You know, what are some areas where they've been able to successfully drive value or drive revenue? And then also put forth what they would like to see. So it's really just, you know, incumbent on all parties to make sure that they're as transparent and setting, I guess, forth the objectives as much as possible in the upfront.
Very interesting. And when it comes to identifying assets, are you seeing anything different these days? Is there almost a diluted set of assets now, because there really is it seems like never ending supply of more assets being created, with with another social network springing up, or another digital asset being identified, or another video content piece being played. It just seems like that we're constantly trying to churn out more assets that we can activate upon with brands.
Yeah, so again, I think it ties back to the idea or the platform, which is a compilation of assets or inventory or tactics. So it's really all about, what's going to be the best platform that a partner could leverage to maximize their sponsorship. And that could include social assets, that could include in-arena inventory, that could include assets that have never existed before. But it's all about, figuring out, what compilation of assets will work best to support a larger idea that could be brought to life across, on site, through social, through digital, through media. So it's really, it really all comes back to the platform or idea.
So I did want to ask you about what you think the main ingredients are to a successful partnership activation. And it sounds like we're starting to come up with those ingredients, and it really is finding the right platform and having it amplified across multiple channels. Is that what you would say are the main ingredients to a successful activation, or it might vary across the board, or is there one or two that really stick out in mind? I know you mentioned the Durango one of a really successful sports activation and what made it successful.
Sure thing. So when I look at activation, there's really kind of seven elements that I think are key to a successful partnership activation. And there are, a partnership that has a platform or idea that's ownable, it's unique, it's social, it's brand-centric, it's targeted, extendable, and measurable. So those are really kind of the seven keys. And I think at the end of the day, creativity is really what drives a lot of the most successful partnerships, the ones that cut through the clutter, the ones that, reach fans and get their attention when they've got a multitude of other things that they could be consuming. So I think creativity fuels everything, but it's really finding that ownable element that no one else can replicate in the arena that has social extensions, ties back to the brand, is targeted against whatever, key audience they're going after, and can be extended in a number of different ways through a number of different mediums, and at the end of the day, one that you can measure. So I think that that's really, really important.
Wow. Yeah, I hope listeners are taking notes on that response. That's great insight. And really finding something that will get fans excited, too, and wanting them to consume it and talk about it. But, Brian, we're running short on time here, and before we get into this episode's shareable stat, though, and our fun questions with you coming up right after, I do want to ask you about yourself and your own personal brand and experience, because you've been named on a lot of 30 under 30 lists and up and comers in the industry. You've shown that you are definitely ahead of the curve when it comes to identifying best practices and really taking initiative. So just give our listeners a little idea about what it's been like to sort of be an ascending star in the industry, how you've gone from just trying to make it and find your way into sports with Ohio U and all that to being someone whose name is known, who's being recognized for his accomplishments. Do you feel like you kind of had this little star turn almost?
Yeah, honestly, I personally don't think about it that way. Kind of my mentality from the get-go is always just to find something in life that you're passionate about it, and when you're passionate about it, you don't mind, putting in the extra time and effort. And my other key thing is really just, finding ways to help out others along the way. And, I always feel like, the more you can help others or help acknowledge others, the more good that's going to come your way. So honestly, I've just tried to align myself with other, sharp, hardworking, passionate, creative people in the industry. And I feel like, by doing so, that continues to help motivate me on a daily basis. And I always just try to get smarter and learn on a daily basis and think about things differently. And at the same time, while, it's great to be passionate about a career, it's also, very important to have a work-life balance. So I've also, again, tried to focus a lot of priorities on personal life and making sure I'm a great, responsible dad and husband and whatnot. So so it's been a fun journey. I've been out of school for about 7 years now, and again, I think that, you know, we're in a really exciting time here in sports with so much changing with social media and new technologies. And, you know, it's just a great, you know, time to kind of be on the forefront of it and hopefully, you know, be a leader that people look to in the future.
Excellent. And definitely you practice what you preach, because you talk about learning from each other and being proactive in learning. And that's exactly what the Partnership Activation Newsletter and your background reflects, is it really is. Let's connect. Let's learn what other people are doing. Let's learn from each other and move forward. I think that's awesome.
Yeah, thanks, Neil.
All right, we will be right back with some fun, quick-hitting questions with Brian. But first, let's get into this episode's shareable stat. Just so much fun talking to Brian. He has so much experience looking at different types of partnership activations. Really smart guy, still really young, and just a great resource. And we'll be right back with him to have some fun with our quick-hitting questions. But first, this episode's shareable stat comes via Scarborough Research, and the other half of it comes from Nielsen data. And it kind of fits a theme these days with women being a bigger focus, it seems, every day within the sports marketing world. And it is that women represent 45% of the NFL fan base and 33% of their viewership audience. So what does that mean? It means, not a huge surprise, that women are becoming a bigger and bigger part of the NFL fan base as well as their viewers. And that kind of goes along with Hispanics as well. You're starting to see numbers with them as well. And you're really starting to see teams across the league as well as media and brands start to react. What will be interesting to see moving forward, though, is whether the content and the activations you see will start to target women more, target Hispanics more, target some of these growth areas more where the NFL deems there's value to be gained. Or will there look to be more omnivorous content, so to speak, content that works across male and females, across all different demographics? So what will be the ultimate path? I think we'll see a little bit of both, and we'll see obviously trying to build relationships with every single fan, but not doing so at the expense of other fans with useless content. So you might see fanicures, but you know that's obviously not going to interest your male fans as much. So keep an eye on these new kinds of content, new different initiatives and outreaches from teams as well as brands as they try to reach these growing numbers of both women and Hispanics as well. Our shareable stat is all about women, and that is that women represent 45% of the NFL fan base and 1/3 of the viewing audience. So that's this episode's shareable stat. Hope you learned something from it and got you thinking. We'll be right back with our quick-hitting questions with Brian Gaynor. All right, that was this episode's shareable stat, and it's kind of a theme these days, it seems like, where the NFL looking to expand its ever-increasing fan base, going after women. Hispanics could be next, so just something to keep an eye on. Definitely, I'm sure Brian will have his eye on as well with different types of activations targeting these up-and-coming demographics in the sports world, because the NFL wants to keep growing, as do all pro sports, and you got to keep looking elsewhere. And right now, women and Hispanics are very attractive fan bases. But I don't want to keep Brian too long, as we have our fun, quick-hitting questions with Brian now. Brian Gaynor, Director of Strategy and Analytics with Freshwire, as well as the creator and producer of Partnership Activation Newsletter. Brian, are you ready for your quick-hitting questions?
Let's do it.
All right, this is a fun one. I'm starting off with a fun one. The most unusual partnership activation you've seen?
Yeah, the one that really, I guess, caught my eye early on was the Houston Astros at Minute Maid Park sold a sponsorship to Chick-fil-A around the foul pole, and they tied it back to, you know, Chick-fil-A with their messaging always talks about foul chicken. And so they had cows kind of featured up on the foul pole, and it was just a great brand integration play and one that caught my eye a couple years back and has, you know, remained with me over the past couple years.
Ah, you gotta love the fair foul wordplay. I also like the foul pole at Petco Park is actually a large Callaway golf driver, which is kind of cool as well.
Yeah, that's up there. Yep.
All right, number two, Brian. The team, league, or sports business that does the best activation consistently, and why?
So my favorite right now is all all the work that Manchester City is doing, especially from a social and content standpoint. They're the leaders by far. They're probably 3 or 4 years ahead of most other organizations, and they continue to just push the boundaries and use their players in new ways to create fun, valuable experiences for fans online. But when you look at ballpark experiences, I think the San Francisco Giants and the work they've done at AT&T Park, they've created so many ownable, unique destinations within their stadium and also through their social channels that I think that they're definitely one to keep an eye on here in the States.
Oh, very cool. And Manchester City definitely always doing good stuff, and I know you are a football fan yourself. And we've actually had Brian Straitman from the San Francisco Giants on our podcast before, and they're always doing good stuff down there.
Great to hear.
Let's go on the other side then. How about the brand that consistently has impressed you with activations?
Yeah, that's a tough one. I've got a lot of brands that I really admire. But at the same time, you know, I think a lot of the work that State Farm's doing right now, especially given their category and finding new ways to cut through the clutter, I think that the recent campaign they did with Chris Paul has really been a great way for the brand to not only tell their message, but leverage a player in a unique way. And then they've found some creative ways to bring that to life in the arena. So State Farm in recent months has really caught my eye between the work they're doing with Chris Paul and Aaron Rodgers, and I'd love to kind of see more brands leverage endorsers in creative ways like that.
Oh, I think that's a fantastic answer. I think anyone who doesn't know about Discount Double Check or Cliff Paul or Chris Paul's twin brother in insurance is not watching sports. They do a great job. All right, number four with our quick hitting questions with Brian Gaynor. The social media platform that you think is best suited for partnership activations, or the platform that should be utilized more for them?
Well, I think moving forward, again, just the way Twitter's positioned with real-time, you know, consumption and live TV viewing, I think that's going to present the most opportunities. So we've only begun to scratch the surface there, and I definitely think Twitter's is going to continue to emerge as the go-to platform, especially around media deals, with engaging fans worldwide in real time.
Definitely real-time events, whether it's the Super Bowl or the World Cup. That's a big part of these players, and Twitter is right in the middle of it all, and they're signing deals now left and right, it seems like.
Yep.
All right, number five. We're moving right along here with Brian. The coolest part about being a young star in the business and sports business world?
It's really just the people you meet and the people you get to interact with and engage with and share ideas with. That's my favorite aspect of working in the industry is just the people, and I look forward to many great years doing that.
Brian, is there anyone you can name drop? Have you rubbed elbows with any star players?
No, honestly, I'm not very, I guess, that's not really my mentality. I'm not very starstruck a lot of times, so.
All right, the last one here, number six, and you might have alluded to it earlier, is your prediction for the next big social network this upcoming year, or maybe it's just Twitter blowing up.
Yep, Instagram. I think Instagram's going to continue to be the platform that people are going to go to for new ways to engage fans, and that's definitely the one I'm keeping my eye on.
Ah, very interesting. They have plenty of power and money behind them with Facebook there. All right, let's do a little bonus one before we get out of here. Brian, tell me your Super Bowl pick, and maybe one thing you're watching for with this year's activations up in New York.
Yeah, I'm going with New Orleans versus Denver, and I think Denver's got the team this year if they can stay healthy. And then, again, it's going to be real-time marketing. Oreo won the Super Bowl last year with their stunt, and it'll be another brand this year that doesn't have a big commercial buy. But so that's my pick for this year.
I love it. Watch out for this year's blackout, perhaps. All right, Brian, one last thing. Now it's your turn to give a social media follow. Who is someone that you recommend that we should be following on Twitter or elsewhere?
J.W. Cannon is my pick. What he's doing with SB Chat is pretty incredible, so I encourage everyone to follow him. He always provides great insights.
Oh, big fan of J.W. Cannon, always looking out for the best activations, and highly recommend him. All right, Brian had to run, but we are so happy to have him on the podcast today. Learned a ton from him about partnership activations, about sports marketing, about how to pitch to sponsors, and what to watch for and what's up and coming these days. But that will do it for this episode of the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast. For more, you can visit our website at dsmsports.net and follow me on Twitter at NJH287. As always, I'm your host, Neil Horowitz. Enjoy your sports, keep your eyes open, and hit me up with anything cool you see. We'll see you next time in a couple weeks with another episode of the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast.